Hello, Susanna Lopez with you from Sisters in Crime, and we bring you a brand new series of Scarlet Stiletto Bites, scintillating short crime fiction stories by our Australian Sisters in Crime authors. Today's story touches on the cultural context of crime and conscience. The Body in the Library. The Sisters in Crime first prize winner for the Body in the Library Award 2013 by Dawn Farnham.
Gigi, there's a body in the library.
Emily Zhang looked up and stared at her sister, her face a study in tetchy annoyance. Gigi, a constant verbal reminder that she was the big sister to Mei Mei, the younger sister, forever responsible for the woman now hanging nervously at the entrance to the study. Of course there's a body in the library, Amy. I'm working. Amy shook her head, her tiny body trembling like one of the fine-boned racehorses Emily bred for the Hong Kong market, but infinitely and tiresomely more needy.
Sorry, Emily.
Amy's voice rose slightly and took on the shrill tone which so irritated Emily.
But it's not Mother. Another body, a different body.
Not a ghost, Amy, Emily said, and could not quite keep the edge of sarcasm out of her voice. Not that Amy noticed. Amy didn't notice anything, not directly connected to the constant open wounds of her emotions. She consulted mediums who spoke to the spirit of their dead father and her dead son. She saw ghosts in windows and dark corners, and heard them in her head.
No!
Emily felt the hysteria in her sister's voice. In a moment she would burst into tears. Anything in this life of toil, anything, was preferable to dealing with a pathetic, hysterical, weeping, lonely 40-year-old pain in the... She shut her laptop and rose. Now, Amy, calm yourself. Have you had your medicine for your nerves?
I forgot. I was doing the incense for Mother and...
Just be quiet. Let's go. Amy's mouth snapped shut. Despite the warmness of the day, Amy drew her heavy shawl around her shoulders and set off down the corridor. The Zhang mansion stood in extensive grounds on a bluff overlooking Freshwater Bay. The walk along the Versailles-style mirrored corridor, which led from the study to the library, was lengthy, and the numerous French doors, all thrown open on this balmy spring day, revealed a sweeping vista of the Swan River. Emily looked, not at the beauty of this view, but walked silently and with purpose behind her sister towards the double doors ahead of them, festooned with carvings of the eight immortals, surrounded by clouds, bats, bamboo and dragons, symbols of wealth, longevity and power. The shawl pulled tightly over Amy's scrawny shoulders was emblazoned with butterflies and peonies, more symbols, youth, love, marriage. Emily felt oppressed by all the mumbo-jumbo of her traditional upbringing, which, despite their lives in Western countries, no Chinese family could ever quite shake off. Emily blamed the communists. Having chased millions of Chinese overseas, they had cemented Confucianist traditions and values unshakably into the new world. And now, even in new China, it had started to come back again. The shawl was typical of her sister. Amy was an eternal and hopeless romantic. Desperate for the affection her disastrous arranged marriage could never have offered her, and looking for love in all the wrong places.
So far, Emily had made a swimming instructor, a piano teacher, and the golf pro rather wealthy and very happy men. She couldn't blame Amy. She hadn't invited such horrors on herself, but gradually her sister's endless neediness grated on Emily. The pathetic shuffling gait, the nervous clutching of her fingers, even the quivering movement of her shoulder blades beneath her shawl. For a moment, Emily envisaged a knife plunged there between those scrawny scapulars and smiled. She hadn't always been pathetic. Amy had been a doctor, a career their mother had forced her to abandon upon her marriage. Without a son, the dreadful curse of the Zhang family, Emily had followed her obligations, studied business and joined her father in the modest mercantile company her grandfather had begun 50 years before. Within a few years, New China had opened its doors and bestowed its bounty on its lost overseas sons and daughters, and the Zhang family had become wealthy beyond their dreams. Amy took a key from the pocket of her dress and unlocked the library door. Emily was momentarily startled. Amy hated locks and keys. A result, Amy claimed, from the trauma of being locked in cupboards by their mother when Emily was away at boarding school. Emily had no idea what to believe. Emily pushed open the heavy double doors of the library. Incense smoke enveloped her like a sticky soup. Incense, the very odour of the old world, which her mother lit every day in front of the spirit tablets of the dead ancestors they had left in the soil of the homeland. It had clung to the cheap curtains in the slummy North Perth asbestos and tile house they lived in, surrounded by other tongues, other customs, out of place, out of time, under the searing Perth sun. Their looks made them strange. This made them stranger, and she hated it. She waved the smoke away and penetrated the half-gloom. She glanced briefly towards the long shuttered windows in front of which, on a low dais, stood the coffin of their mother. The late morning sun glowed faintly, sending slivers of warm light onto the silver and gold embroidered covering cloth, a half-threadbare 200-year-old heirloom, the only object of value brought from China when their grandparents had fled 60 years ago. She looked around. When the money had begun pouring in, her father had built this mansion on a bluff, high above the sprawling suburbs, along strict feng shui lines, the river at the front, the low hill at the back. Before his health began to fail, he had built this Chinese library, decorated and furnished it, entirely in a fashion which resembled, as closely as he imagined it, the study of a 17th century Confucian Mandarin, and shut Australia out of his world. Her eyes moved over the ancestral altar with its spirit house, porcelain plates of fruit and rice, its silver censer, small spirals of incense smoke rising and hanging in the air, over the jeweled screens of the four virtuous plants and writhing dragons, the heavy mahogany desk, the jade discs and chimes, bronze bells, the Qing scrolls and Ming porcelain, to the built-in cabinet which occupied one side of the room. The upper shelves were glassed and contained the books of imperial paintings and Chinese classics that her father had spent his waning years collecting and contemplating. The lower section had doors behind which other scrolls and objects were stored, thousands of them. His collecting mania had only ended on his sudden death 2 years ago, here at this desk, of a heart attack. Since then, she had not set foot in this room, until her mother's body had been carried in her coffin and placed before the window 3 months ago by the Buddhist bonze, chanting incantations and sutras. The Chinese geomancer had told them that the most auspicious time for burial was next month, when the moon was somewhere, or on the afternoon of the equinox of something or other, as decreed by the Chinese almanac. Mumbo jumbo. She had left the library and not come back, but Amy came every day, somehow impelled inside, dusting these artifacts and lighting incense. Just another obsessive tick which Amy could not put aside, like sharp-eyed spirit mediums and handsome gold diggers. Emily frowned. As far as she could see, everything seemed perfectly in place. No body swung from the chandelier, lay sprawling on the carp-covered rug, or had its head deep in the goldfish bowl. She felt her face grow bloodless and anger boil down in her stomach. More ghosts, more crap from her sister. Oh, it never ended. She turned. Amy was standing inside the closed doors, the gold key in her hand. "There," Amy said, and pointed the key at the doors of the cabinet. Emily bit back her vitriol and forced herself to be calm. She was practiced in the art. She had learned such skills in the face of her mother's constant onslaught about duty. It was not enough that she had studied hard and now managed a multi-million-dollar company. Since the age of 18, first Emily, then Amy, had been exhorted monotonously to choose a mate amongst the array of pathetic suitors who were extracted from suitable Chinese families in order to marry and do their solemn and filial duty by giving birth to the desired grandson. Emily had resisted and travelled a lot, staying away. Amy had been ground down and obeyed. It had led to horror. But nothing could stop her mother's tongue. She actually blamed Amy for the failure of that revolting marriage. Her mother's sudden death, whilst Emily had been on a business trip to China, had come as a shock, but also as something of a guilty relief. She walked to the cupboard with hard little steps and pulled open the door with an abruptness which spoke of her suppressed fury, ready to round on her sister with accusations of insanity, when, to her amazement, she saw the undeniable outline of a corpse, swaddled in bandages, lying on the inner shelf. She staggered back and away from the cupboard, let out a small cry, and sat abruptly on her heels. "Told you," Amy said, squatting next to her sister on the tail of one of the red carp woven into the heavy rug. "How," began Emily, "I found the keys to the cupboards in the desk. Thought I'd take a look and do a bit of dusting," Amy said, a small note of triumph in her voice. "Opened this one and there it was. Gave me a shock, I can tell you." Something in the way she said this struck Emily as funny, and she laughed. Amy caught the laughter and smiled, then gave a chuckle. A small fit of giggles ensued, ending nervously with them looking at each other. "Who knows about this?" Emily said, standing up. She glanced at the double doors. "Are they locked?" Amy rose too. "Yes," she showed Emily the key. "Just me, I think. Who else comes in here?" Well, that was true. As they aged, their parents practically lived in this room. Their mother had always taken care of it, dusting, praying before the spirit house, hoovering, filling the room with choking incense, mourning, emerging only to lay into her daughters with accusations of betrayal. The two women continued to stare at the shrouded figure on the shelf.
How did it get here?
Amy shrugged. Is it really a person? Emily said suddenly. I mean, Dad collected all sorts of things. Is this something he collected?
I don't think he collected people, though,
Amy said without a trace of sarcasm.
Should we look at it?
Emily's eyes opened wide.
Should we what? Well, I'm not going to. We should call the police.
Emily spoke forcefully, but suddenly felt assailed with doubt. Police here, all over the house, poking and prying. And if it was a body, the newspapers would have a field day. Emily gave Amy a little shove.
Well, it might be a statue or something. Go look at it.
All right, Amy said surprisingly and went forward. Emily followed, peering around her.
Ugh, it's dusty, Emily said.
It was. As Amy pulled it from the shelf to the floor, clouds of dust flew up and it seemed to exhale a long breath. They both leapt back. The shape collapsed a little, the bandages loosened, then the whole package settled. They waited, Emily clutching Amy's arm.
Not a statue, said Amy. So, let's see.
She went forward and Emily let go of her sister and hung back.
There's writing, Amy said, peering at the body. In Chinese. How's your written Chinese? Mine's terrible.
Oh, not good enough to read a contract, but I can manage a letter.
So come here and read.
Emily made a face.
Come on. Maybe it says, a souvenir of Shanghai, or don't open till Christmas.
Amy laughed and Emily smiled. In this ridiculous situation, Amy seemed entirely at ease. Her nervousness seemed to have fallen away. Emily went down on one knee and leant gingerly over the head of the body. The characters in red were written across the bandages of the forehead, somewhat faded but visible. Emily peered, mouthing the characters for a moment, then went as white as a sheet, rose and darted away. Amy rose. Emily's face was a picture of uncomprehending horror. She took her sister's hand.
What? For God's sake, what is it, Emily?
It says, I can't believe it.
What? What, Em? Tell me.
It says, first daughter's husband. The sisters stared at each other, then down at the swaddled shape on the floor.
I need a drink. Is there anything to bloody drink in here?
Emily looked around somewhat wildly. Amy patted her sister's hand.
It's all right. We'll get to the bottom of this. Oh, there's rice wine in the cupboard by the altar. It's for the spirits, but what the hell?
Amy took a bottle of rice wine from the shelf and two libation cups and poured. They both drank.
Well, you seem pretty cool, I must say, Emily said.
Yes, Amy said, a slight expression of surprise in her voice.
I do, don't I?
Emily's phone went off in the distance, sending the ride of the Valkyries echoing along the corridor. She looked at her watch.
Oh, we can't stay in here all day. I have to go to the office this afternoon.
Amy poured wine into her cup and tossed it off.
Right,
she said, grabbing some scissors from the desk. Went down on two knees next to the body. Let's take a look.
God, Amy, you're not going to open it.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Amy said and began cutting around the neck area and up over the cheeks.
Emily poured more wine and drank, staring, gripped with horror and curiosity. Gradually, the bandages loosened and Amy peeled them away. The yellow face thus revealed was taut and dry, like the mummies they'd seen in the British Museum years ago, or those photos of the bodies from the Taklamakan Desert. "God, it's really a person," Emily said, drawing closer. Its nose was pointed, the eyes sunken, the lips drawn taut above the bones of the chin. Amy poured wine into her cup and her sister's.
"Your husband. Congratulations," Amy said. "Good choice."
Emily snorted. Amy put down her cup and began to cut down the centre of the bandages. They were old and fell apart easily.
"What are you doing?" Emily said. "Checking if it's a man. Otherwise your wedding night will be a disappointment."
They started to giggle. And when they stopped, Amy had cut all the bandages away to the legs. They both stared at the shriveled appendage and began to laugh again.
"Well, he's better than mine," Amy said. "The quiet type." "Not likely he'll try to murder you, eh? I'd keep him."
Emily stopped laughing.
"Sorry, Amy. Oh, so sorry. I never said that properly to you. But how could anyone know? He was a psychopath."
Amy shrugged.
"Mum did. She knew he was disturbed. But what the hell, women just have to put up with anything. Even nutcases who want to kill you. That was her philosophy. Well, she lost her precious grandson, didn't she? I hated her, you know."
Amy stared at the carpet. Emily pulled her sister into her arms. The psychopath had accused Amy of cheating, shot her and their son, then put the gun to his head. Amy had pulled through, but she might just as well have died back then.
"I was away. I wasn't here for you. I left you in that nightmare. I'm so sorry." "You were always away, even when you were here."
Emily began to cry, flooded with guilt and regret. Amy hugged her sister and kissed her cheek.
"More wine," she said.
The women drank.
"So Mum killed you a man and stuck him in the cupboard. Is that what happened?"
Emily frowned.
"Mum? Really? Did she kill him? Or Dad? Or no, maybe he just died."
Amy rose and threw the empty wine bottle in the bin with a resounding clang. She took another from the shelf and opened it. Emily raised her glass.
"You were never going to marry. Ma knew that. That's why she bullied me. So she arranged one for your afterlife. So you won't be a ghost." "She believed it. Unmarried girls wander like wraiths, eternally looking for husbands. So she provided you with one."
Amy stared at the corpse.
"Who is it, do you reckon?"
Emily shook her head.
"Any suitors go missing? He's ugly enough to be Timothy Chan."
Emily smiled.
"Where are his glasses? Although the dick looks about right, I'd guess."
They started to giggle again.
"Maybe they dug him up," Amy said. "I hear they do that when they want a bride or groom for a ghost marriage. They go to the cemetery and dig one up."
Emily got up and sat heavily on a chair.
"How long's it been there?"
Amy shrugged.
"Could be 10 years, 20, who knows?"
They poured some more wine and sat side by side, contemplating the desiccated object in front of them.
"Do you think Mum came in here?" Emily said, and looked at him.
"Chatted to him about family matters? Whinged about me, what a dreadful daughter I am? Why hadn't he got me pregnant yet?" Amy smiled.
I do.
They both tossed back their glasses. Okay, well, we can sort of figure out the why. Don't know the who. Should we try to find out? The ride of the Valkyries rang out again. Emily looked at her watch. God, what are we going to do? Amy stood up.
Well, we can't find out who right now. Maybe never. But one thing's for sure, we can't leave him here. We have to get rid of him.
But how? Emily felt panic rise in her chest. The scandal of this would kill the company. New China allowed certain family traditions to rise again, but it drew a line. Anything reeking of superstition or old China was shunned. This was the worst. Grave robbing? Murder, perhaps? Ghost marriages? They would not forgive it. Amy went to the desk and opened a drawer. From it she took what looked like a small-handled wrench. She held it up to Emily.
Casket key, she said. Sometimes I open up the coffin and stick pins in Mother.
Amy! Emily was genuinely shocked, but not sure that it wasn't true. Amy spent every day in here with their dead mother, and a casket key. It was creepy. Amy made no reaction. She went to the coffin by the window and pulled away the embroidered covering. The coffin was mahogany, heavy and large. The gold on the handles and hinges was real. Their mother had ordered it herself years ago. It was a Chinese tradition to organize all the details of your funeral. The family vault was ready. She would lie next to her husband and parents-in-law in the oriental section of the cemetery. The casket key slid into the bolt hole and she turned it four times. The lid gave a small sound like a sigh. Emily blanched.
Come on, Amy said. Say bye-bye to Mummy. You didn't see her, did you, before they put her in here?
I don't want to. Emily looked at Amy.
She looked weird.
She'd always had a nagging suspicion about their mother's death. She had been healthy, remarkably so for an 80-year-old. Her death had been very sudden, but the doctors had declared a stroke and the matter had been closed. Still, there was something odd. Amy shrugged.
Typical of you. You always ran away. Well, now it's time to face up to a few things. Come on.
Amy lifted the coffin lid and threw it back. Emily stared at the yawning hole, transfixed.
Amy,
Emily said, turning her eyes to her sister.
Did you... What, Em? Did I take a syringe and inject air into a vein in Mother's neck and cause a stroke? Did I do that? For all the dark cupboards and cruelty? For the violent husband and the murdered son? Did I?
Emily stared at her sister.
And if I did? Amy said.
Emily felt sweat break out on her forehead. She glanced at the library doors. Amy smiled grimly.
Don't worry, you're quite safe.
She darted forward and clutched her sister's hand. Before Emily could react, she was dragged beside the coffin and found herself staring at her mother's dead face.
She let out a cry, expecting to find the body stuck with pins, mutilated perhaps. But the sight before her was one of calm. The expression on the embalmed face peaceful, the face of her mother, but somehow youthful. Amy laughed lightly.
See, there she is, old bitch, gone. I'm not nuts, you know. Actually, I feel better today than I have for a long time.
Amy took off her shawl and went to the mummified body.
Come on. It's a day for discarding things, especially dead husbands. Help me wrap up your beloved in the wedding shawl.
Emily obeyed. Suddenly, Amy didn't look weird. She wasn't trembling. Emily had no desire to ever ask Amy that question again. Some things it was better not to know. They wrapped the shawl covered in butterflies and peonies around the corpse and lifted it. It weighed nothing, was as light as air. They deposited the body alongside their mother and stood looking down. Amy took the rice wine bottle and poured a little over the two bodies.
It's purifying, the rice wine. Want to say anything?
Emily shook her head.
Shall we put it all away? Amy said. Bury the past with them. I think I'd like to.
Yes, Emily said, relieved. Emily shut the lid and Amy locked it down. They replaced the cover, put the casket key into the desk drawer, locked it and closed the cupboard doors. Amy took out the small vacuum cleaner and hoovered the dusty shelf and the carp rug. Emily put it away, the electric cord, slithering into its slot like a snake.
The snake is one of the five poisons, Amy said. It chases away evil spirits.
Emily looked warily at her sister. No more mumbo-jumbo, Amy. Amy laughed. It was youthful, carefree.
No, she said. Promise.
They looked around the library. Nothing was out of place. Emily unlocked the doors and swung them open.
You seem right at home with bodies. Why don't you take up medicine again, Meme?
Emily said as they passed into the corridor.
I think I might do that, Gigi.
They smiled and together closed the library doors. The end. I'm Susanna Lopez. I look forward to narrating another Scarlet Stiletto Bite story for you next Friday.